Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
It is July 19th, a beautiful Friday summer day with 109 days to go until the election. This episode will air on Tuesday, the 23rd, and at that point, we will be 105 days before the election.
Your task will not be an easy one. Your enemy is well-trained, well-equipped, and battle-hardened.
There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
Good night, and good luck.
Welcome back to the Lincoln Project Podcast. I am your host, as always, Rick Wilson. I am joined today by the great Mario Nicolaias. He is a friend. He is an attorney. He is a Lincoln Project veteran and a Lincoln Project current general counsel. He is also one of the smartest election attorneys out there in the country. And I want to talk to him about a bunch of things today. One way you may have heard Mario's name before is, aside from his terrific writing, is that he is the attorney who helped bring the case to the Supreme Court trying to invalidate Donald Trump on the 14th Amendment grounds on the Colorado ballot for this year. The Supreme Court shockingly, weirdly said no to that. But Mario, I'm glad you joined us today. I have a bunch of stuff I wanted to run through with you today. And let's start with the big question that I think a lot of people are thinking about and worried about in this moment where Joe Biden may get replaced on the national ticket. Talk to us about the complexities of how you transfer all that money he has in the Biden campaign account out into the world. I know some of it has to go to the DNC. I'm trying to get to, like, so people understand the friction and the legalities of it. This is not just you don't just flip a switch and give it to somebody else.
Right. Well, so let's start with that Biden's raised hundreds of millions of dollars, and you've done that over the course of months, years doing that.
Yeah.
You can't just flip a button and, oh, suddenly you have all this money there. The problem is it goes to a specific committee, and it is for use by that committee and that committee alone to help whoever that committee is meant for. And transferring that, you just simply can't transfer all of it over to say, hey, a new committee for Governor X or, you know, Senator Y. It's just not going to happen. Now, you know, there are a whole bunch of intricacies and a whole bunch of questions and a whole bunch of unanswered questions. So, for example, if Biden were to bow out, and, you know, I think we're all on the same page as, you know, he's the candidate until he says he's not, and he's the only one who has a say. Could it go to Kamala Harris? You know, and so there are a lot of Democratic election law lawyers who are like, yes, but obviously Republicans will say no. There'll be a lawsuit over it. There will be an absolute lawsuit over whether she could use it or not. For right now, it's just making sure that Trump stays where he's at, which is mid-40s polling, which, you know, seems like a ceiling for him, but he crept up a little bit after the events of last weekend. A lot of the folks that, you know, he might have gotten might have fallen asleep and might be asleep through November thanks to that speech last night.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about, in the broadest way, the guy seems to have an absolute Teflon Kevlar shield from legal accountability around him. And talk to us a bit about the case that you guys brought in Colorado and what it would have meant had the Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution, I think, as it's meant to be interpreted. And what it was, what the purpose of that suit was.
Yeah. So first of all, let me just be super clear. We didn't bring the lawsuit to bar Trump from office. He barred himself from office under the Constitution by engaging in insurrection on January 6th. He did that to himself. What we did is we just basically said he can't be on our ballot in Colorado. And so we had, you know, six unaffiliated and Republican voters who brought this lawsuit, challenged it. We did win in the state of Colorado and then brought it up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
And, you know, as the Supreme Court is wont to do, it tucked its tail and ran away and said, hey, you know, what we really need to do is send it over to that that great bastion of efficiency, the United States Congress, to make a decision on. Which, you know, obviously it'll never happen, and it's particularly right. This Congress right now, since one of the people who's running is an election denier, mm-hmm. someone who absolutely has supported his claims. And so, you know, if we'd won, it would have rippled across the country. We didn't. So yes. Now what we're faced with is we've got to beat him at the ballot. And frankly, we've got to beat MAGA at the ballot. I think one of the things that was so disheartening about the events of last Saturday is, you know, there are a lot of people who think that, oh, you know, people cheering that on. I can tell you, none of us at Lincoln Project are, and I certainly don't, because we have to beat them at the ballot. That's the only way to ensure this country's safety, is to beat him and MAGA at the ballot, and make sure they understand that Americans do not want that kind of autocracy in this country.
And that really is what he's promising. And when you look at the, as much as they're trying to walk back on Project 2025, the guide, whatever version you say it is, it's Agenda 2047 or Project 2025 or the RNC Platform Committee document. It's all leading into a sort of more autocratic idea than we have of an American democracy. And certainly, and I look at it, one thing I think, because you and I both come out of, you know, Republican world, one of the things I look at it as is like, there's a fundamental radical nature to it. It's not a conservative philosophy. It's a radical philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially when you're looking at it from this legal perspective, I mean, how long did we hear, literally for decades, and we worked with Republicans about activist judges?
Right.
And meanwhile, we have Eileen Cannon, who Donald Trump went out of his way to praise last night.
Right, on the stage last night.
Right, dismissing a case on a theory that no one has ever agreed with. I mean, I guess maybe one Supreme Court justice has agreed with that. And I don't want to name names, but it rides with Barrett's Bomas. And he's the only one who's mildly agree with it. It's not a shocker.
Right.
Alito might too, but, it's going to get reversed. It's going to get reversed by the Court of Appeals. And, you know, Donald
sure.
Trump would try to push that back as well. I'll tell you what's terrifying is, you know, with Eileen Cannon showing that she will do whatever for him, if he wins, we could be talking about Justice Cannon. I mean, there's no
100%.
Reason. But people talk about, oh, well, there could be some retirements and Alito and Thomas might retire from the court and then he'd be able to replace them with more people. I have a more terrifying view because, frankly, the destruction of this country is based on the imagination of those who
right.
are trying to destroy it. And they've got some real imaginative people. Why wouldn't they impeach Sotomayor? You could see
sure.
that happening. Impeach Sotomayor, impeach Kagan, and then put Eileen Cannon in that position. Make it 7-2, make it 9-0 with sycophants there. And this is the kind of undermining that we're talking about and the kind of things that dictators and autocrats do.
Yeah, we predicted, you know, when we did that ad Aftermath last week, we predicted you could stack the deck with 5-6 more judges, get it up to 12, do something that would, or 13, do something that would be, you know, the last thing that you would imagine, but failure of imagination is always the failure of democracies, folks. It's always where democracies break in the course of these things. And I guess, you know, we're looking at the other cases that are pending out there, and none of them really seem like we're going to land. There won't be another case that lands before the election. We won't have Georgia. We won't. Florida is now in the appeals process. Chutkin may move the ball, but I don't know where that stands. So what are your thoughts on those cases?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're solid cases, but I think one of the problems was that the Department of Justice just got going too late. I mean,
yeah.
I don't understand why they did not look at what happened with Justice Scalia's death when it just got stalled out for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
by the U.S. Senate and said, hey, look, these guys are going to stall out. We got to start early. I mean, you know, it should, you know, Trump talked about dictator on day one. He should have been indicted on day one of Biden's, you know, administration. I don't know why Merrick Garland. I mean, Merrick Garland had a front row seat to that kind of delay tactic. He should have known we got to start right away. You know, you can't change things in aftermath. But, you know, and that's, you know, the scary thing is, if Trump takes office, we'll never see any of these cases go forward. And the only case that will ever been put on is the case that we brought in Colorado. That'll be the only time evidence is ever tried. And every court that actually reviewed the evidence said, yes, this did happen. He did engage in an insurrection. The U.S. Supreme Court just ruled on legal grounds that we weren't even allowed to ask the question.
Right. They never, you never got in the Supreme Court case, in your Supreme Court case, you never got to the actual meat of the argument. They it was more of a procedural shutdown, correct?
Yeah.
Non-lawyer, as you know, every day, not a lawyer.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even then it was wild. So we had a 103-page decision from the lower court, the Denver District Court. We had a 132-page decision from the Colorado Supreme Court. Then it got up to the U.S. Supreme Court, 13 pages. They took a month to decide and write 13 pages total. I mean, most Supreme Court decisions are, you know, 25, 30, 50, even 100 pages.
Right.
But this one, they just was like, oh, 13, we just really don't want to deal with it.
Right.
And, you know, it's incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, I could imagine that idea of wanting them to look at what really was a serious consequential constitutional question. Must have been kind of a heartbreaker, because it really was something that is, you know, for all these people who say, oh, I believe in the founders and the will and the intent of the Constitution, man, they really don't seem to believe in it as quite as much as they claim on paper.
No, I think that's right. And I think the other piece is that, you know, if they're willing to ignore that part of the Constitution for Donald Trump, what else are they willing to ignore? And you saw the immunity decision that just came down.
That was actually my next question, was about the immunity decision. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, thankfully the liberal justices, at least on this occasion, decided they would dissent from it, because dissents are important. And we know from the metadata that in our case, they originally were going to dissent, but decided to do a concurring opinion on different grounds. But, you know, they have this immunity power, and if he wins and he has this immunity power, and if he says, okay, well, I can reshape more of the court, and you know that U.S. Senate, if Republicans control that, and Congress as well, I mean, I just don't see any way where they don't impeach the liberal justices as a threat to America, you know? And, you know, you move forward with that, and you ask, well, what happens in 2028 if he's in office? Are they willing to ignore the 22nd Amendment to the U.S. Constitution? Because if we're doing that for Donald Trump, he's said he thinks that sometimes you have to throw out the Constitution. He said that before.
Right.
And I think that's the terrifying piece here, is we're all playing under a certain set of rules and expectations that he has no intention of abiding by.
You know, I keep going back to that as a conservative, I have always believed that limiting the power of the state, limiting the power of the executive, is a fundamental check on bad behavior. And that's whether that's a Democratic president or a Republican president. The idea from George Washington on was that the executive would be a constrained office, that it would not be all the power all the time, no accountability, and this immunity situation. And for 240 years, we kept that idea. And now, do you think people have fully internalized the scope of what that court decision meant for the future of this country? Do you think people really understand how broad that decision really is?
No, I don't. And what I think that they've also failed to do is apply that decision and also look at how it works with Project 2025.
Yes.
We're talking about firing tens of thousands of civil servants, federal civil servants, and replacing them with loyalists who will do whatever you want. And then you say on top of that, the president is immune from any illegal action he takes, you know, that's an official action, which he'll claim that anything is while he's president.
Sure.
you basically have created a situation where you know that there are going to be laws broken to enforce what he wants to enforce, whether it's sicking the DOJ on his enemies, whether it is shutting down, using the FCC to shut down media that he doesn't like, whether it is going after businesses that might have some property that he wants, and that he wants to benefit from. I mean, it's terrifying, but you're basically setting up a situation where you said he's above the law and he can bring in tens of thousands of people to help him to execute all of those illegal or what we would think of as illegal. But the Supreme Court has said, oh, well, he can't be prosecuted for that action.
Right.
I mean, that's the horrifying, it's one thing on top of another, and people cannot take each individual thing out of context. You have to look at them all together and how they pile up together and move us towards the death of democracy.
I think you're right. I think that's a really good way to look at it. This is a mosaic. It's not just one.
Yeah.
It's not just a completed painting. It's one tile and another tile and another tile and another tile. And suddenly you see this picture, and it's really a frightening and consequential picture.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
So I wanted to ask you also a little bit about the 2024 election cycle. We have seen the early signs that the Republican team is going to contest, even if they're even if it's clear that they're not winning, that they're gonna take 2020 the 2020 actions, which was run by a clown car of attorneys from John Eastman to Rudy to Jenna Ellis, all these other people, and professionalize it and operationalize it and fund it in a way that wasn't there in 2020. What do you think the implications of that are? Because I am deeply concerned about that.
Oh, sure. And it's not that they've even started. I mean, they started a while ago. And they're doing things like trying to suppress the vote in places like Nevada and Arizona and Georgia. They are absolutely trying to limit drop boxes and where people can, how they can request ballots, what you have to do to get a ballot, what you have to do to vote, whether you can even get water as you're standing in line, in blazing heat in the South, either in Georgia or Arizona or wherever you might be. I mean, it's the kind of thing that they understand that the majority of Americans are against them. And I have no doubt that whoever is on the ticket for the Democrats, whether it's Biden or whether it's Harris or whether it's Newsom or whether it's a garbage slog, is going to win a majority of American votes. But they're trying to, pick areas where they can stop people from voting. And I'll throw this out there, too. I think it's a terrifying idea, but I think they'll fight for the rights of people to carry long guns in front of voting locations and outside as they watch voting centers.
We saw it in Arizona. Be prepared for that.
We saw the aftermath last time in Michigan when they stormed the Capitol, and then that led to storm the U.S. Capitol. What makes anyone think that they're not going to storm voting centers in places like Fulton County or in Maricopa County? Luckily, we do have President Biden in office right now. He can order he can order a lot of security, and he can ask those governors to work with them to protect those places, and hopefully they will. But still,
maybe Merrick Garland will do something on his way out.
he'll be there for longer, and we can actually get to see these prosecutions under a continuation of this administration. Which we'll eventually get there. But, I think that's what's at stake for us, is we're looking at that and we're looking at, is this okay? Because look, when you're talking about what we said, he's got immunity. You've got Project 2025 replacing tens of thousands of folks. The courts are all on his side. You've got people lining up with guns, you know, at voting locations. It's not much of a step from that to canceling elections because we have a national emergency, right. And we can't tell whether these elections are proper or not. And there's all these illegal aliens that he'll claim. And so therefore we can't hold elections anymore. I mean, you see how this just goes step by step by step into 100%. A terrifying, horrifying future. And it's the same future that autocrats and dictators have employed since the beginning of time. I mean, since the Pharisees.
But I mean, it really is like the three things that used to fundamentally underpin America were free and fair elections that were by and large free from violence, intimidation. They were by and large accurate, and they were by and large accepted. And now none of those three things seems to be a part of the thinking about elections today. The delegitimization of the American election thing. Again, I think it's a profoundly unconservative thing that we're suddenly pretending that having a representative democracy is somehow a weak spot for America. You know, it's somehow like a problem for America.
It's definitionally anti-conservative. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Conservatives like you and I were conservatives because we wanted to conserve the democracy.
Right.
I mean,
the system seems to work pretty well. Let's not fuck it up.
Right. And then, you know, you got these guys going out and saying, oh, it's broken. Let's not do it anymore. I mean,
right.
Literally, you're trying to destroy it. It's antithetical to being a conservative. And honestly, the Republican Party under Trump is not conservative anymore. It's not.
No, oh, no.
It doesn't
it's
deserve that label.
Radical.
Yeah, it doesn't get that. Right. And it'll be worse. You know, we ran those trucks outside of the RNC that said, you know, dictator on day one.
Yep.
They were great. I'm glad we got some attention on that. But I mean, yeah. I'd like to point out to people, in the history of the world, there has never been anyone who has taken dictatorial power and simply willingly given it back.
Precisely.
If you're a dictator on day one, you're a dictator on day two and three and until the people take the power back from you.
That's right. That's right. Well, it is going to be there are a lot of challenges ahead. Mario, I'm honored to have you by my side and on our in the forefront of this fight against some very dark and bad people. We will talk to you again here on the Lincoln Project podcast soon. Folks, Mario is a terrific writer. You can find his stuff pretty frequently in Colorado papers. He is part of the weird Lincoln. We have like little clusters around the country. There's a little Colorado cluster of Team Lincoln out there. So where else can they find your stuff and how can they find you on social media?
My Twitter handle is at Mario Nicholas Esquire. So at MarioNicolaiesq. That's a Twitter or X or whatever the crap it is today. I saw someone write Sitter, which I think is kind of funny. Goes with Elon Musk, ex-Long Musk. Twitter's just a perfect place to be an attorney troll, and it's just great.
Well, all right, my friend. I appreciate you, and we look forward to seeing you again next time.
Thank you.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.